Hello and welcome to The Wanderer, the Anglo-Saxon Heathen podcast. This week we're going to be talking about a few things, but we're going to start off with the wolf. Few animals capture people's imagination quite like the wolf. For thousands of years, the wolf has fascinated us, frightened us, and drawn us in. Perhaps it's because there's a part of us that identifies with that wild, untamed spirit we see in the wolf. The wolf features prominently in myths and legends from many North American and European cultures, as well as from other places around the world. Let's look at some of the stories still told today about the wolf. Celtic wolves. In the stories of the Ulster cycle, the Celtic goddess Morrigan is sometimes shown as a wolf. The connection with the wolf, along with the cow, suggests that in some areas, she may have been linked to fertility and land. Prior to her role as a warrior goddess, she was linked to sovereignty and kingship. In Scotland, the goddess known as Cailleach is often associated with wolf folklore. She is an old woman who brings destruction and winter with her and rules the dark half of the year. She is portrayed riding a speeding wolf, bearing a hammer or a wand made of human flesh. In addition to her role as destroyer, she is depicted as a protector of wild things, like the wolf itself, according to the Carmina Gadelica. Dan Puplet of Trees for Life describes the status of wolves in Scotland. He says, "In Scotland, as early as the 2nd century BC, King Dovadilla decreed that anyone who killed a wolf would be rewarded with an ox. And in the 15th century, James I of Scotland ordered the eradication of wolves in the kingdom. Last wolf legends are found in many parts of Scotland, although the very last was allegedly killed in 1743, near the River Finehorn, by a stalker named Macqueen. However, the historic accuracy of this story is dubious. Werewolf legends were particularly prevalent in parts of Eastern Europe until very recently. The Scottish equivalent of the legend of the Wolver. On Shetland, the Wolver was said to have the body of a man and the head of a wolf. Native American tales. The wolf features prominently in a number of Native American stories. There is a Lakota tale about a woman who was injured while travelling. She was found by a wolf pack that took her in and nurtured her. During her time with them, she learned the ways of the wolves, and when she returned to her tribe, she used her newfound knowledge to help her people. In particular, she knew far before anyone else when a predator or enemy was approaching. A Cherokee tale tells the story of the dog and the wolf. Originally, dog lived on the mountain and wolf lived beside the fire. When winter came, though, dog got cold. So he came down and sent Wolf away from the fire. Wolf went to the mountains and found that he liked it there. Wolf prospered in the mountain and formed a clan of his own, while Dog stayed by the fire with the people. Eventually, the people killed Wolf, but his brothers came down and took revenge. Ever since then, Dog has been man's faithful companion, but the people are wise enough not to hunt the wolf anymore. Wolf mothers. For Roman pagans, the wolf is important indeed. The founding of Rome, and thus an entire empire, was based on the story of Romulus and Remus, orphan twins who were raised by a she-wolf. The name of the Lupercalia festival comes from the Latin lupus, which means wolf. Lupercalia is held every year in February and is a multi-purpose event that celebrates the fertility of not only the livestock, but people as well. In Turkey, the wolf is held in high regard and is seen in a similar light as to the Romans. The wolf Ashina Tuu is the mother of the first of the great Khans, also called Asena. She rescued an injured boy, nursed him back to health, and then bore him 10 half-wolf, half-human children. The eldest of these, Bumin Kayan, became chieftain of the Turkic tribes. Today, the wolf is still seen as a symbol of sovereignty and leadership. Deadly wolves. In Norse legend, Tiu is the one-handed warrior god, and he lost his hand to the great wolf Fenrir. When the gods decided that Fenrir had been causing too much trouble, They decided to put him in shackles. However, Fenrir was so strong that there was no chain that could hold him. The dwarves created a magical ribbon called Gleipnir that even Fenrir couldn't escape. Fenrir was no fool and he said he'd only allow himself to be tied with Gleipnir if one of the gods was willing to stick a hand in Fenrir's mouth. Tyr offered to do it, and once his hand was in Fenrir's mouth, the other gods tied Fenrir so he couldn't escape. Tyr's right hand got bitten off in the struggle. Tyr is known in some stories as the leavings of the wolf. The Inuit peoples of North America hold the great wolf Amarok in high regard. Amarok was a lone wolf and did not travel with a pack. He was known for preying upon hunters foolish enough to go out at night. According to legend, Amarok came to the people when the caribou became so plentiful and the herd began to weaken and fall sick. Amarok came to prey upon the frail and ill caribou, thus allowing the herd to become healthy once more so that man could hunt. Wolf myths and misconceptions. In North America, wolves today have gotten a pretty bad rap. Over the past few centuries, Americans of European descent have systematically destroyed many of the wolf packs that existed and thrived in the United States. A survey of American popular culture and mythology reveals that surprising extent to which the concept of the wolf as a monster has worked its way into the nation's collective consciousness. Woden is associated with the concept of the wild hunt and leads a noisy horde of fallen warriors across the sky. He rides his magical horse Sleipnir and is accompanied by a pack of wolves and ravens. According to Daniel McCoy at Norse Mythology for Smart People, as the wild hunt's various names across the Germanic lands attest, one figure was especially closely associated with it. Woden, the god of the dead, inspiration, ecstatic trance, battle frenzy, knowledge, the ruling class, and creative and intellectual pursuits in general. For our ancient ancestors, many spirits and deities were associated with nature, wildlife and plant growth. After all, if you had just spent the winter starving and freezing, when spring arrived, it was certainly time to give thanks to whatever spirits watched over your tribe. The spring season, particularly around Beltane, is typically tied to a number of pre-Christian nature spirits. Many of these are similar in origin and characteristic, but tend to vary based on region and language. In English folklore, few characters stand out as much as are recognisable as the Green Man. Strongly connected to Jack in the Green and the May King, as well as John Barleycorn, during the fall harvest, the figure known as the Green Man is a god of vegetation and plant life. He symbolises the life that is found in the natural plant world and in the earth itself. Consider for a moment the forest. In the British Isles, the forests 1,000 years ago were vast, spreading for miles and miles, farther than the eye could see. Because of the sheer size, the forest could be a dark and scary place. However, it was also a place you had to enter whether you wanted to or not, because it provided meat for hunting, plants for eating, and wood for burning and building. In the winter, the forest must have seemed quite dead and desolate, but in the spring, it returned to life. It would be logical for early peoples to have applied some sort of spiritual aspect to the cycle of life, death, rebirth. Author Luke Mastin says that the first to use the term Green Man seems to have been just before World War II. He writes, "The label Green Man perhaps surprisingly dates back only to 1939, when it was used by Lady Raglan, wife of the scholar and soldier Major Fitzroy Somerset, 4th Baron Raglan, in her article, The Green Man is Church Architecture, published in the folklorist James Fraser Associates, The Green Man with May Day Celebrations, and with the character of Jack in the Green, who is a more modern adaptation of the Green Man. Jack is more specifically defined version of the nature spirit than the earlier Green Man archetype. Fraser speculates that while some form of the Green Man was probably present in a variety of separate early cultures, he developed independently into a variety of newer, more modern characters. This would explain why in some areas he is Jack, while in others he is Robin of the Hood or Herne the Hunter in different parts of England. Likewise, other non-British cultures seem to have similar nature deities. The Green Man is typically portrayed as a human face surrounded by a dense foliage. Such images appeared as far back as the 11th century in church carvings. As Christianity spread, the Green Man went into hiding, with stonemasons leaving secret images of his face around cathedrals and churches. He enjoyed a revival during the Victorian era, where he became popular with architects who used his visage as a decorative aspect in buildings. According to Ryan Stone of Ancient Origins, the Green Man is believed to have been intended as a symbol of growth and rebirth, the eternal season cycle of the coming of spring and the life of man. This association stems from the pre-Christian notion that man was born from nature, as evidenced by various mythological accounts of the way in which the world began, and the ideas that man is directly tied to the fate of nature. Legends connected to the archetype of the Green Man are everywhere. In the Arthurian legend, the tale of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight is a prime example. The Green Knight represents the pre-Christian nature religion of the British Isles. Although he originally confronts Gawain as an enemy, the two later are able to work together. Perhaps a metaphor for the assimilation of British paganism with the new Christian theology. Many scholars also suggest that the tales of Robin Hood evolved from the Green Man mythology. Allusions to the Green Man can even be found in J.M. Barrie's classic Peter Pan, an eternally youthful boy dressed in green and living in the forest with the wild animals. Today, some traditions of Wicca interpret the Green Man as an aspect of the horned god, Serununos. If you'd like to honour the Green Man as part of your spring celebrations, there are a number of ways to do so. Create a Green Man mask, go walk in a forest, hold a ritual to honour him, or even bake a cake. Thank you for listening to this episode.